Mitzvah Shin Dalad 304 Shelo Lechol Kali Mitvua Chadosha Ad Hayom Hahu. Not to eat roasted grain from new produce until that day. What's that day? The second day of Pesach. Shelo Lechol Kali Mitvua Chadosha Kodem Hazman Hanizkar. That we should not eat roasted grain from new grain before that time. Kilomar shafa bishloasa pas min hatua, velo tachana, velo rikola min achitem o min asorim baur, the ochal mehen chayev gam alehem. So we learned in the last mitzvah that there's a prohibition, just to review, because last time it was after 3 the Antif and everyone was kind of sleeping. So the, or some people are not here. So to review briefly, there is the prohibition of what's called chadash. Chadash means new grain that has taken root before the second day of Pesach. Taken root being defined as either being planted 3 days or 2 weeks before. There are different definitions. So the grain of the five species traditionally considered to be wheat, barley, rye, oats, and spelt have been planted before Pesach. So you're not allowed to eat it until the second day of Pesach. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, there was the Korban HaOmer on that day. So you were allowed to eat it as soon as the Korban HaOmer was brought. But nowadays, there's no Korban HaOmer, so you have to wait the entire day. And once the second day of Pesach has passed, then one is allowed to eat the new grain. And of course, on and Chutz La'aretz, so we have to wait till what for us is the third day of Pesach, because we're not sure that that might be, it's possible that that's actually the second day of Pesach, based on the principle of Yontif Sheni. Yeah.
It's fried.
Right, no, that's fine. If it's planted in the middle of January, somehow, and it's put in the ground, so then it doesn't matter what botanical processes happen to that kernel of grain that's been planted, as long as it's in the ground before that time. That's right. So one is not allowed to eat these grains before the second day of Pesach, or what might be the second day of Pesach. So if it's planted, you just imagine, so if a grain is planted in the summer, so even if it grows and is harvested, so you're not allowed to eat that grain until the following Pesach. Every Pesach permits the grain that was planted in the previous year.
Two questions. Number one, did you say fried?
This here is talking about, which we'll get to just after the background, is talking about roasted grain.
Uh-huh. Well, I think some of a prohibition against, getting enough. I mean, why worry about every possible way you could use the,
It's not a matter of what type of way you could use it. It's the form that the product takes. So the idea is that even if you might think that it only applies, it says lechem. It says in the pasuk three things. Lechem, v'koli, v'karmel.
Yeah.
So it says, you might just, if it just said lechem, which we discussed in the last mitzvah, that was the official title of the last mitzvah, talking about, he titles it Tvua Chadasha, because he's giving the general principles of Chadash, of a new grain, but the main idea is that it's dealing with lechem, that the main form of grain is bread, so you're not allowed to eat bread that was made from new grain before that time. So again, if wheat or whatever species of grain is planted, say, in the winter, and it doesn't grow yet, but it was planted well before Pesach, and now it grows after Pesach, and it's harvested in July, so that's fine. But if it was planted after Pesach and harvested in August, which is called spring wheat, spring wheat could be planted before Pesach in theory, but colloquially, we call it winter versus spring wheat, depending. That's how the growing season goes in America. We pointed out that in Israel, the prohibition of Chadash is not a hardship at all, because the growing season is completely in sync with this. That grains are planted before Pesach and they're harvested after Pesach. So it's really no problem. I mean, you might have a few days, a couple weeks maybe, where there's some fluke and there's harvested before and you can't eat it till after, but it's usually not a big deal at all. The issue only comes up in places where the growing season does not correspond to the rules of Chadash. So in America, half the wheat corresponds to the rules of Chadash, and half the wheat does not correspond to the rules of Chadash, and they're used for baking different things. Winter wheat used for baking crumbly things like pretzels, and spring wheat is used to bake stretchy things like pizza. So that's they're used for different things. So if products are made from spring wheat, So people who want to be careful about the prohibition of chadash need to make sure that they're getting from the spring wheat that's from the previous year and not from the current year.
And the southern hemisphere presumably would be a much bigger problem because of the...
Huh. Right, you just have to store it for longer. Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember this prohibition years ago. I didn't saying anything about chadash.
Why, Ms. Search? That's an excellent, excellent point. Why do you not remember anyone saying anything about the prohibition of chadash years and years ago? So first of all, in Europe, where the growing season does not correspond, because it's still very cold, many places in Europe at Pesach time, so they plant a lot of times grains after Pesach and harvest them in the summer. So the whole winter, basically, you're dealing with a prohibition of chadash. So in Europe, so when you say years and years ago, I don't know whether you mean in Austria or whether you mean in the U.S.
Well, Austria can't say. Okay.
Uh-huh. Okay, but in both places, Austria is not southern Austria. I mean, not so cold. It's not like Lithuania. But the... first of all, so since the growing season in Europe and other places does not correspond to the prohibition of chadash, so a lot of Jews were lenient. The general custom was to be lenient about the prohibition of chadash for a few reasons. One idea is that we find already that it's a machlokes tanoim in the Mishnayos as to whether the prohibition of chadash applies outside of the land of Israel at all. According to some of the tanoim, it's like any agricultural mitzvah and it only applies in the land of Israel, so you don't have to worry about it at all. In Chutzaretz. Furthermore, we find an opinion in the Gemara that doesn't say this in the Mishnayos anywhere, but in the Gemara we find that some of the Amoraim who lived in Bavel held that Chadash outside the land of Israel was prohibited, but only Dirabanan. Whereas most of the Amoraim and the simple understanding of the conclusion of the Mishnayos is that Chadash is an Isser Daraisa everywhere in the world. But the lenient custom in Europe was based on the idea that maybe we paskin that it's only the Rabbanan Chutz Laretz, and so if there's a doubt as to whether something is Chadash, so we can resolve it with the principle of Sveika the Rabbanan Lekula, that when there's a doubt about a rabbinical prohibition, you can resolve the doubt leniently. And there's also the famous Shita of the Sefer HaTruma and some other Rishonim, which is that just like Truma Sumaisris, so Truma Sumaisris, the tithes, so Chazal imposed the requirement of separating tithes from produce in certain places in Chutz Laretz, but they only imposed it in places that are close to Israel, like Syria, Western Jordan, maybe Egypt. So those places, since they're close to Israel, the Chazal wanted people who are living there to get used to the idea of separating tithes, because maybe since they're so close, probably took them longer to get to Israel than it does nowadays for us to get to New York, from New York to Israel. Okay. But since they live so close to Israel, so maybe they'll think about making Aliyah. So they impose the requirement of separating tithes in these places close to the land of Israel. So according to Sefer HaTruma, the prohibition of Chadash is the same. The prohibition of Chadash in Chutz Laretz is only the Rabbanan, and it applies only in the land surrounding the land of Israel. There's another leniency of the Bach, which is at Achra, where he says, these are all Rishonim that I was talking about before, so the Bach says that the prohibition of Chadash only applies outside the land of Israel if it was grown in a Jewish-owned field. But if it was grown in a non-Jewish field, so the prohibition of Chadash does not apply. This is based on a lot of diyukim about, all these shitas are based on certain diyukim about where you could bring the Korban HaOmer from, which is the Korban that that actually served to permit the new grain in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. So based on these leniencies, the custom in many places was to be lenient about the prohibition of Chadash, even though according to 99% of Rishonim, the Wipaskin like the simple understanding of the conclusion of the Mishnayos, which is that Chadash in outside the land of Israel, any place in the world, is an Isser De'oraisa. It's a biblical prohibition, but nevertheless, all the Rishonim who bring the lenient shitas, I can't say all, every single one, but you find the thread running through all the discussion of all the leniencies about Chodosh and Chutz Laretz is that, they had no choice. They had to be, otherwise they would have had no bread to eat. They would have literally starved if they hadn't found leniencies about the prohibition of Chodosh, because the whole winter, they didn't have freezers to store tons of challah, and they didn't have facilities to store so much flour. So, and the flour was scarce, so maybe they couldn't buy so much necessarily in advance. So therefore, they would literally starve during the winter if they did not find leniency for the prohibition of Chadash. Nevertheless, there were a few people all throughout history who, in all of the countries, who did say, no, I mean, this, I don't want to rely on these leniencies, because according to most shitas, this, it's an absolute biblical prohibition, even in Chutz Laretz, and even if there's a real emergency situation, then we cannot be lenient about this. Oh, so that's why Mrs. Hirsch didn't hear about the prohibition of Chadash in Austria. So why didn't Mrs. Hirsch hear about the prohibition of Chadash in America when she first moved to America? Here, there's no... maybe in those times in Austria, there wasn't a shortage of food either, but hundreds of years ago in certain places in Europe, there was. Jews were very poor, and they had a shortage of food. So why didn't she hear about the prohibition of Chadash in America, where there was no shortage of food, and there were freezers, and... You know, there was plenty of possibility for people to be careful about the prohibition of Chadash. So the answer is that many years ago in America, there used to be a wheat surplus. And they had so much wheat, they didn't know what to do with it, so they never used to tap into the new grain until all the old grain was finished, which was easily a year previous. So therefore, there was no problem of Chadash in America 60 years ago or so. That's the famous story that Rav Soloveitchik, who, at least in Europe, questioned about what he did in America, but at least in Europe, he was stringent about the prohibition of Chadash. There's stories about how in Berlin he would only eat a certain type of low-quality bread because it was known that the flour that was used for that bread was yashan, yold, which is the opposite of Chadash, which is the new grain. Okay, so he came to America, and there are two different versions of the story. That one is that he asked his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, who was already living in America, if there's a problem of Chadash flour being available in America. And Rav Moshe Soloveitchik said, no, there's not a problem because there's a wheat surplus, and we don't have to worry about that. It's so highly unlikely, impossible, that bread would be Chadash, that we don't have to worry about it at all. Another version of the story says that Rav Soloveitchik came and he asked someone in Boston, you know, is there Chadash in America? And the person said no. And therefore, he continued to not, you know, be particularly vigilant about what the bread he was eating to make sure was yashan, because he was under the impression that there was no problem with Chadash in America. Of course, what this person that he asked really meant was, there's no Chadash in America, there's no Shabbos in America, there's no Kashrus in America, there's no... Okay, so, fine.
Communication.
Anyway, it seems that in the later part of his life, the Rav was not, or Soloveitchik was not, he didn't at least check. Maybe in theory he was makbid on it, but he did not check because he still relied on the assumption that there was no Chadash to be found. Of course, now we know that there is Chadash to be found because now we started selling the wheat elsewhere in the world, especially Russia. So they do tap into the new stores of grain in America. So there is a problem of Chadash. So everybody, you know, 100 years ago, so everybody in America was careful about Chadash. Because there was no Chadash to be found. But when the problem started, so there was a new movement to try to get more and more foods in America certified as Yashan, because now that there's no Shas Adchak, there's no emergency, so it's completely proper to accommodate the opinion, again, the majority, the vast majority opinion of the Rishonim. This seems to be the simple conclusion of Chazal, that Chadash is an Isser D'oraisa even in Chutz Laretz, even in America. So this push was started by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, the Rav's brother, and certain other people who started the trend of trying to get kosher grain products, not only certified as kosher, you know, in terms of the types of ingredients, but in terms of the prohibition of Chadash as well, which is why you find that a lot of kosher baked goods are labeled as Nasa Mikemach Yashan, or Kemach Yashan, to make it to show that these products adhere to the proper halachic practice, which is to be careful about the prohibition of Chadash even in Chutz Laretz.
And what does OU do?
The OU is not makbid. They give a hechsher to stuff that's Chadash based on...
Every agency does that.
As far as I'm aware, there is no kashrus agency in America that will not give a hechsher to something that's Chadash. They'll give the OU will say, if the company says, you know, hey OU, you know, we want a hechsher on our products and we'd like it to be certified Yashan as well. So the OU will say, sure, we'd be happy to certify your product as Yashan. And they do it. But I'm saying,
but
these
how
not,
do they know?
They find out where the source of the flour. Yeah. There are, of course, people in Israel, So people live in Israel itself, there is no leniency, and everybody agrees that the chadash is prohibited midaraisa in the land of Israel. So therefore, everybody in Israel is makban yashan, first of all, they should know. But there is a problem regarding imported products that a lot of Israelis, they don't even think about the prohibition of chadash, because in other words, if anything has extra there, of course it's yashan. So they get imported products from America, Cheerios, whatever types of American cereals. They don't think that this is a very, very serious leniency on their part, that they're eating products that are chadash and chutzlaretz, whereas it's really unnecessary at all to be lenient on this in Eretz Yisrael, because of course everybody, for products that are made in Eretz Yisrael, of course they're yashan. I mean, there are certain, most Mahadrin Israeli kashrus agencies, even if they give a hechsher in chutzlaretz, so they make sure that the stuff is yashan. So the badats of the Eda Charedis, for example, as an example of hechsher that basically everybody relies on. So if they give a hechsher to certain things that are, first of all, there's flour that's imported, even in badats, Israeli bakeries, that they're baking the bread in Israel, but they import the flour from Chutz Laaretz, so they make sure that flour is yashan. And I've seen in Israel products with a badatz, where the pasta is actually made in Italy, for example, and they have a badatz hechsher. So everything in the world with the hechsher of the badatz of the Eda Charedis and certain other hechsherim is yashan, even if it's not actually made in Israel. There's certain European hechsherim also which are makbid on yashan, such as Kedasia, which is the Charedi hechsher in London. Will not give a hechsher to anything unless it's yashan. And certain other hechsherim elsewhere in the world are makbid, but as far as I'm aware, there is no American hechsher that will not give a hechsher unless the product is yashan, although it's sometimes, if requested, they will include the yashan status of the product in the...
Because they're relying on leniencies.
Right. I asked Rabbi Ganak about this once. They said, so why aren't the kashrus organizations... I happened to catch him. I was going to Englewood or Teaneck for Shabbos when I was in college, I think. And on Friday afternoon, so he happened to be on the same jitney as I was going home from the OU. So he said,
"What else are you going to talk about?"
So I said, "Why aren't the kashrus organizations trying to move toward a yashan only standard for American Jewry? There's no shasat chak." He said, "No, because they wouldn't be able to give a hechsher to a lot of things, and people wouldn't have what to eat."
Well, if you go move outside of New York and see if you can find kosher food somewhere in the Midwest.
Sure. If you want to have, when I was in college, there was one bakery in Minneapolis that had OU bread.
Uh-huh.
Right? If the OU decided to be makpid on it, there would be no kosher bread in Minneapolis. Right? So that's the problem.
Yeah. If there's enough of a market amongst the kosher consumer, so then if everybody wants it,
That's the dilemma, of course, of kosher agencies.
Right.
For example, the Rabbanus, in Israel, mm-hmm. like that, which is, are you going to, in fact, are you going to try to, accommodate mm-hmm. the largest number of Jews you can manage, to keep kosher,
right. mm-hmm.
or are you going to be makpid on things and leave a lot of people out?
Right. I hear that. I'm just saying, I think that it behooves, again, if more and more people demand it and the kosher agencies start pushing for it, then I think a lot more of the companies that are baking, these regular Goyisha breads that happen to have an OU or regular national hechsher will be more inclined to try to make sure that the source of their flour is yashan.
I mean, would it be hard to do in America?
It's not hard at all, is my understanding. Right. That a kosher bakery, for example, that's makbid, a Pas Yisrael bakery that's makbid on yashan, that's very, very easy. In fact, a lot of national brands of flour are always yashan, like Hecker's flour, and there's also gold medal flour, which is from a certain... plant from Kansas City. So it's, if you look at the dating code, it says KC on it. So apparently all of those happen to be from winter wheat, and they're all yashan. It's so easy. And in New York especially, all of us live in New York, right? So New York especially, it's so easy to be makbid on yashan that it's really, really difficult to understand why people are still lenient on this, as was the subject of the article I have to bring it back to you. In the most recent RJJ journal, which somebody wrote an article saying just this, that since there's no shortage of food and there's storage facilities and yashan bakeries are available everywhere in New York and major Jewish communities, okay, so people who live in major Jewish communities, at least, it's very, very difficult to understand why a lot of people are still lenient about the prohibition of yashan. At least, at the very least, says the Mishnah Berurah, when you have a choice. Mm-hmm. So if you're in your own house, okay, if you get invited out to eat in someone else's house, you have no idea where this grain comes from. So you can maybe rely on what the Rama says in the Shulchan Aruch that there's some sort of svek sveika. There's a double doubt. You know, there are many doubts as to what, you know, where this grain comes from. So maybe you don't have to be choshesh. You don't have to be concerned that it's chadash. And b'di'evid, you're allowed to eat it. Maybe not everybody agrees with that. But if you go to a wedding, something like that, a catering hall, if you don't, you're not sure that everything is yashan. Maybe there's this, at some point there's still a majority of things that are yashan. Whatever it is, so but at least when you're responsible for your own food, so it really does make sense. This is not by any means a crazy chumrah. This is 99% of Rishonim. This is the Shulchan Aruch. This is everyone who hold that it's absolute Isser D'oraisa, and there's nothing to discuss Chadash in Chutz Laretz. Yeah.
Okay. Now the Torah gives three forms. Right.
Yeah.
Does this apply, for example, to other derivatives, say wheat starch, mixtures of,
Yes, that's a good question. So getting back to this particular mitzvah, so the Sefer Chinuch mentions that it's not only bread, but even grain that was roasted, and you just eat it, that is also included. So the exact details we discussed in the last mitzvah. Chayv ochel gam ken malkos al kazayis min hakali. So if you eat a kazayis of the roasted grain, then you're chayv as well. So let me just discuss the last form, and then we'll get back to that point. Mitzvah shin heith for 305. Shelo lecho karmel mituach hadosha ad azman haniskar. So you also, this prohibition of chadosh applies to karmel. What's karmel? Shelo nochal karmel chadosh kodem hazman haniskar shenemar v'charmel lo sochlu. It says in the pasuk v'lechem v'koli v'charmel lo sochlu. You're not allowed to eat lechem or koli or karmel. That karmel nikra tvua keluya bashibolim. So what's karmel? It's not grain that's taken out of the stalks and roasted. It means grain that's roasted in the stalk.
Stalk.
So it's, no. That stalk, it hasn't been taken out of
the
chaff.
Right. Dried in the stalk.
Right. So it says granis belaz. So these types of grains that was called that in medieval Catalan, Latin. Okay, maybe it was Latin. Okay. Says that so that's also a subject to the prohibition of chadash v'chayvin al karmel gamken b'kazayis. And again, it'll be subject to the penalty if long as you ate a kazayis, an olive's bulk. So not everybody agrees with this definition of karmel. Some say karmel means raw grain, which makes more sense because why do you need kali and karmel? Grain that's roasted in the sheaves or roasted out of the sheaves. Not everybody agrees that this is what karmel means, but the basic idea that the Mefarshim point out that the Torah is just saying all these three things. Yes, that formally there are three separate mitzvahs, but basically just trying to communicate the idea that any grain product that is chadash is prohibited. There was a cute shita that some Achronim had, which is that since it mentions these things specifically, so maybe derivatives to the extent of a liquid. Mm-hmm. If these grains are processed into a liquid, such as... So beer, that was a standard derivative of grain in the olden days. That's why some poskim suggested that maybe that would only be usur midrabanan, since it's too far removed from the three types of grain that are mentioned explicitly in the Torah, the three preparations of grain. So maybe there is more reason to be lenient about a suffik chadash of beer than there is about actual grain foods. That's why certain people in Europe were more lenient about the beer than they were about the actual foods because of this reasoning. But okay.
Vodka is distilled from grain.
The Torah gives.
Well, whiskey is always yashan because it's aged for over a year, so it's by definition yashan. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Might be chametz shavuot of a Pesach, but it's definitely yashan.
Well, give the three, basically like bread, which means we know that it's ground up and then bread, and then roasted or some form or other or whole, unroasted or was grain. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about say making beer, it's entirely from process. That's where you malt, you take barley, you make it wet, you let it germinate.
Right.
So the starch turns to sugar, and then you heat it up to stop the germination, and then you put it into a mash, and then you ferment it.
Right. Okay?
So the whole process of it is different. So they could really say this is not only, it's not simply that it has been going through a change, it's going through a different process altogether.
Yeah, but unless the Torah just means that anything, fundamentally, it sounds for the Rambam, not from everyone, but it sounds for the Rambam, that basically, although it singles out these three types, basically what the Torah means is any grain derivative is chadash. But again, the Pnei Yoshua, I think, has this chiddush that since that maybe the liquids are only the rabbanon, so therefore there's more room to be lenient.
Now, one other thing. In terms of chometz, whole grain, you know, like a whole, if you eat like a you know, some a whole piece of wheat on Pesach or something like that, that's
mutter, yeah.
It's mutter, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's interesting because actually...
A raw piece of wheat that has not come into contact with water? Yeah.
Yeah. And also the roasted grain for sure, because it's even more...
Right, roasted grain is better because roasted grain cannot become chametz, right? The same reason matzah cannot become chametz.
Yeah.
The Amr Zichron and Racha Achal Min Achodash Lechem Vekoli Vecharmel Chayev Al Kolachas Vachas. If you eat each of the three types, then you're Chayev Malkus, three sets of lashes for the three types. Amr Gamkein Koli Lo Hayatzarech Lomer. Why does it say Koli? Aval Iskira Kosu Lechalik Shem Is Chayev Al Koli Bifnei Atzma Vechen Al Karmel Velechem. That didn't need to mention all three things, but it mentions the Koli to emphasize the idea that you get three separate Malkus for all the three types. So maybe since Koli is the extra one, so Lechem and Carmel, you shouldn't be chayav two separate Malkus. No, it says that Koli in the middle in order to separate the two, so you're chayav on each one individually Malkus. That each one is the same thing. That the idea behind the prohibition of Carmel of Chadash is the same as the previous two things, which are Lechem and Koli. So again, the prohibition of Chadash is something that's undergoing somewhat of a renaissance in America. I mean, it started, 30, 40 years ago, but is now pretty much widespread that all kosher bakeries and major Jewish communities, or at least most of their products, are in fact yashan. And again, one should try to be makbid on the prohibition of chadash wherever possible, because it is in Issur D'oraisa, even in America, according to most poskim. But again, this is not, again, if you're just starting now, so it's a little difficult, because there's not really yashan stuff available to stock up, unless there's something that has a hechsher for yashan. But there are many products that have a hechsher for yashan. Certainly Israeli products with a good hechsher are all yashan. And a lot of brands of flour, as I said, are Yashan. There's a lot of Yashan stuff available. A lot of the Hamisha brands of pasta are also certified Yashan. Mm-hmm. Geffen barley is Yashan. There's plenty of Yashan stuff to be had. The issue that people have is really with if you want a certain non-Jewish product that happens to have a Hechsher, so then it's a type of cereal, so those don't have a Hechsher for Yashan. So people want to be makbits, a lot of times stock up in advance.
Yeah, but even if you buy bread and it says OU on the package of the bread, and it doesn't certify that it's Yashan, so it didn't come from a Jewish bakery, it came from some industrial.
But it says OU.
Right, so if you want to be makbid, so you can't buy that.
Yeah.
Okay. You have to buy the Jewish brand of bread, or you have to stock up or bake your own.
Would you mean stock up and keep it frozen for a year?
Not a year.
Space.
There is some controversy that... I mentioned in the last year that there is someone by the name of Yosef Herman who has been doing a service for many, many years called the Guide to Chadash, where he tells you, you look up a product, and he tells you how to determine if it's Yashan by the dating code on the package. So basically, his guide gives the dates where before that point, that's 100% sure that this product is Yashan. But the question is, so maybe you don't need to be 100% sure in halacha. You know, there's things like majorities and things like that. So his dates are very machmir, but most people who really take the prohibition of Yashan seriously rely on his guide in order to make sure their products are Yashan. I'm not saying, you know, it's possible you have to talk with some experts in the field, you know, people who work in Yashan certification for the OU, for example, to determine how much after those dates it's reasonable to assume that certain products are Yashan. But nevertheless, that's the basic way that people stock up. They look and they find out what's the latest date they can buy the certain product. And that's, yeah. And then they buy a lot of it and they stock up.
If flour is incorporated into a product, does it ever become Yashan if it wasn't that to begin with?
All grain in the world, besides what was planted, you know, 2 days before Pesach, becomes Yashan on Pesach.
I'm talking about once the flour has been incorporated.
It doesn't matter. Every molecule of grain in the world becomes Yashan every Pesach. So it's good. So if you want to start being makbid, really makbid on Yashan, so kids, could I do it after Pesach, so all your kitchen kashers itself. Because otherwise, if you really take it seriously, that's Nisr Daraisa, you have to kasher your dishes if you use them with Chadash.
Right,
yeah?
The third day. No?
Right, the third day.
Is it on Kalim?
Sure, yeah. Huh? I mean, a lot of people are makbid on Kalim because we... If you're sure that it's Nisr Daraisa and Chutzlar, it's yes, it traves up dishes. But a lot of people assume that you don't have to be makbid on Kalim if, A, there's doubts as to whether it's 100% sure Yashan, and also because there's sort of a general principle that's was set down by the Ramoy and the Tshuva, that if there is any group of serious Jews that treat this as kosher, then it doesn't, you don't have to kasher dishes.
And suppose it was cold, like just your Cheerios.
Oh, that's not fine. That's not wrong. That's but in theory, yeah, it does. It
so
does.
So, I mean, is it general principle? Like Bishalakim is Matami Kalim? You know,
Bishalakim is the Machlokas. We generally assume that it does. That mm-hmm. if something is 100% bona fide Bishalakim, then it does trafe up the dishes.
Really?
Yeah. So,
uh-huh.
So if your housekeeper, you know, makes some eggs. So
if it's in a Jewish house, that's why I say 100% bona fide Bishul Akum. There are some minority shitas that if it's in a Jewish house, then it's not a problem with Bishul Akum. We don't buy like that, but vis-a-vis the dishes, there might be room to make all based on that.
If the maid turns on the flame.
Right. Right. I said there may be any, if there's an actual Shiloh, we can discuss it when it comes up. But yeah, that could, it's possible
you should have. You cannot eat the eggs.
Yeah, but it's possible that you have. Yeah, it's very, very possible that it. Very possible that it does.
So what about if you mix flour? One is Yoshan, one is not Yoshan.
Oh, excellent, excellent question. So there is a principle called Davar Sheyeshlo Matirin, that if there's something that's not kosher now but will become kosher later. So the rule is that it's not batal. Like this is according to the Rambam. This is part of the understanding of why. The chametz on Pesach is not batal at all because the subject to the principle of davar sheyeshlo matirin, it's usher now, it's going to become mutar, at least midaraisa. It might be al chametz shel Pesach midarabanan, but at least midaraisa is going to become mutar after Pesach. So therefore, it's not batal at all. But regarding chametz on Pesach, this always applies, but regarding other prohibitions that are subject to the idea of davar sheyeshlo matirin, this only applies to a taroves min bemino. That if you have Yashan flour and Chadash flour, that if you have, let's say, a huge sack of Yashan flour, and somebody takes a teaspoon and drops in a few flecks of Chadash flour, so it would prohibit the entire flour, a huge sack of flour, from being consumed because there is not batal, and it's subject to the principle of Davar Sheyeshlo Matirin. The idea is, just wait a few more months and you'll be able to eat the whole thing beheter. So why would you rely on bittul, on nullification now? However, this does not apply to a taroves min b'she'eno mino. If you have a teaspoon of chadash flour and it falls into your chicken soup, so then the chicken soup would still be allowed, which is not the case in chametz on Pesach, obviously, that even if it's a taroves min b'eino mino, that if it's different types of things, then it still prohibits the food from being consumed, no matter how tiny the amount. Technically, chadash flour with other chadash flour is, or grains, they don't have to be ground out the flour, is not batal at all. And I think that, you know, if the hetsherim that are giving hetsher for yashan there take this very seriously. They wouldn't, in a private setting, so maybe you would combine the leniencies, you know, there's a doubt as to whether it's really chadash, maybe, all the types of things. So maybe lemaisa and a pinch, maybe we could be matarid, but the hetsherim they give hetsher for yashan have to make sure that everything is 100%. Yashan, and they don't rely on bittul, certainly they can actually the flour as Yashan or something of that nature.
Sure, you go on a low-carb or gluten-free diet, and that takes care of the whole problem, right?
yeah. That's why I say a certain person in our shul is gluten-free and dairy-free. Oh. So he's makbid on Yashan, he's makbid on Chalav Yisrael, he's makbid on all the chumras. It is interesting, now that we mentioned the Chalav Yisrael, that Chalav Yisrael is a much more popular chumra, especially in like the yeshivish world, than Yashan is, even though Chalav Yisrael is only a chashash iser derabanan, and Yashan is a serious chashash iser deraisa. So most people, in other words, if somebody's makbid on Yashan, usually they're makbid on Chalav Yisrael also, but if somebody's makbid on Chalav, not always, if somebody's makbid on Chalav Yisrael, then it's not, it's a hit or miss as to whether they're also makbid on Yashan. I think I met one person in my life who was makbid on Yashan and not on Chalav Yisrael because of this reason, because Yashan is a Shailav and Isra Doraisa, and Chalav Yisrael is not. Yeah?
One says that, I think among Hasidim, that Chalav Yisrael, there's some kind of a mystical business about it. You know?
That's true. That's right. Why it got more popular.
Right. Whereas for them also, you mentioned that one of the Hasidic post game, you know, was a big champion of saying, hey, we don't have to worry about it.
Right, there were Hasidim who were very makbid on Yashan, even in Europe, but overall, they have some sort of story about the Besht that he was makel about at least certain types of Yashan, at least beer or something like that. So they rely on the Bach that Yashan and Chutz Laretz is not a problem. The Sadmer Aruv was apparently, he wanted to say when he heard that people are starting to be more makbid on Yashan, he said that a chumrah on Yashan is a kula on bugs. That if you store the flour, so it's going to get wormy. It is and it isn't, because if you store it under proper conditions, so then you can have the best,
again, this is
best of both worlds.
This is not a problem in cold places, but in hot countries, bugs in the
wind. Maybe in warmer countries,
it's
more
is absolutely a problem. I mean, I lived in Brazil for 7 years. We always sifted the flour. All the flour was sifted because they couldn't eat unsifted flour.
Even goyim?
No. Oh. And the goyim also sifted, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Because anybody, it's for health reasons.
Mm. Really?
Yeah.
Okay, but there are some people in America who even sift the flour, but the normal psak in America is that you don't need to sift flour because it's, unless you see some sort of reisa, that there's something clearly wrong with the flour, like webbing, you know, a clear presence of insects, then you do not need to sift the flour. That's a normal psak. Okay, let's just start this so we don't make at least the beginning. Mitzvah Shin Vav, a related mitzvah, 306. Mitzvahs Sfiras HaOmer, the mitzvah of counting the Omer, which is, of course, connected to the Korban Omer. Lisbor tishavar boim yom yom havas haomer. To count 49 days from the day when the Omer is brought. Shu yom shishasar b'nisan, the 16th day of Nisan, which is the second day of Pesach. Shneemar usvartem lachem imacharas ha-shabas miyom aviachem es omer atnufa. You shall count from the day after the Shabbos, which, of course, we understand to be the first day of Pesach and not a regular Shabbos. Miyom aviachem es omer atnufa, the day that you bring the special korban omer. V'aminyan hazeh chova. This recounting is a requirement. V'aleinu limnos bo hayomim yom yom. We count it day by day. V'chein shavuos. We have to count the weeks as well. She'akosuv omer tisperu chamishim yom. You shall count 50 days. The Omer Gamkin in Sefer Dvarim, when it repeats the mitzvah, says, shiv'os shavuos tisper lach. You shall count 7 weeks. Oferush amar abayi b'gemar b'menaches mitzvah lemimne yomei u'mitzvah lemimne shavuei. That you must count both the weeks and the days. V'yesh min ha-mefarshim shayadaitam ki kavanas akosu limnos ha-shavuos dafka kishehen shleimos. That some people say, there are a lot of rishonim that say this, that's mitzvah to count the weeks is only at the end of each week. Aval hazgir b'chol yom lomar shekein shehein kach v'chaf yomim v'kach v'kach shavuos ein tzorech. You don't need to do like we have the minhag nowadays to say every single day that when it's the 15th day of the Omer, you say today is 2 weeks and what you say today is 15 days, which is 2 weeks and 1 day. So that's not necessary. Just on day 14, you say today is 14 days, which are 2 weeks, and then the next day you just have to say today is day 15. It's just at the end of each week. They have to count the weeks. You don't have to count it.
They didn't have zero then, so you don't say, you know, there's 3 days and 0 weeks ago. Zero hadn't been invented yet.
V'yesh mehen she'amru ki aderech hanivchar lahazkir minyan ha-shavuosim hayomim tomid b'chol yom. That it's better to count, make the count of the weeks and the days every day, which is, of course, our minhag, that we count the number of weeks and the number of days every single day of the Omer, with the exclusion of the first week, obviously. The Reish Shemayim Yivchar Darkam Lahotzi Mikol Safek, and you're someone who fears God shall choose the way that he gets out of all the doubts. V'lo Yachush Tiferes Hamilos. Don't worry about talking too much. Otherwise, you might think that if you say the weeks and the days every day of the Omer, then it's just, you know, it's too much. It's not as nice. You know, when we're davening and we're fulfilling mitzvahs, so you want to say things in a concise, nice, polished manner. We don't want to say extra things. He says, no, don't worry about that in this case, because you'll be able to fulfill both opinions about how to count the Sefiras Omer. V'chei noagu hayom b'chol ha-mekom moshe shamanu, and indeed, this is the minag nowadays in every place that we heard, and in fact, our minag nowadays.
What is the obligation of women vis-a-vis candle?
Oh, the obligation of women vis-a-vis Sfiras HaOmer, which we'll get to at the end, but since you asked, I could discuss it now. The Sefer HaChinuch says that's only for men because the mitzvah says Eisha Zman Groma. That's the majority shita, that women are not required to count Sfiras HaOmer. However, there's an interesting Ramban, where the Ramban says there are certain, he gives a list of mitzvahs in which women are chayev, and he includes Sfiras HaOmer. This is the only one who says this, basically. Why on earth should women be chayev in a Sfiras HaOmer? So they want to say Torah that the Ramban held that it's not a mitzvah to say Shazman Groma, because it's not really connected to the second day of Pesach, but it's connected to when the barley... It starts on the second day of Pesach, the Maaseh Account, but fundamentally it's not really connected to the day per se. It's connected to the time that the barley ripens. So therefore, it goes by an event, that the barley ripening, and it doesn't go based on the time. That's a, you know, lamdisha understanding of why the Ramban might say such a thing, but most other people... Right, most other people say, huh? Of course the mitzvah says Shazman Groma. What are you talking about? A similar machlokis exists about Kiddush Levana, which is not a mitzvah sasei midaraisa, but it's a bracha that's required to be said on the new moon every month. So the question is, are women obligated to say Kiddush Levana? So some people say no. It's a mitzvah to say Shazman Groma. It's once a month, and it comes from time to time, and it's a positive obligation that you have to make this bracha, midrabanan, okay? But it's a mitzvah to say Shazman Groma. Women are exempt from Kiddush Levana. And others say, it's not a mitzvah to say Shazman Groma. It doesn't have to do with the day. It doesn't have to do with a month, per se. The din is that when you see the new moon, you have to make this bracha. The new moon, right, the event. The new moon is only available once a month. So,
and it's really not fixed, because if it's cloudy or something like that, you know, you can't do it.
Right, but others say since Lamaisa it's connected to the beginning of the month, therefore it's still considered mitzvah zei shazman grama. But we've turned Kiddush Levana into this whole ceremony, but fundamentally... When I was talking about this in the shiur between Mincha Ma'ariv and Shabbos afternoon, so there's a progression. We discussed from the Talmud Yerushalmi to the Talmud Bavli and then to the Masechet Sofrim that in each subsequent text, Kiddush Levana becomes a more involved ceremony. That this, the most fundamental manifestation of Kiddush Levana is found in the Talmud Yerushalmi. It just says, when you see the new moon, you say, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Mechadesh Chadashim, who renews the months, or renews the moon. That's it. You just it's like, you know, when you see a rainbow, you make a bracha. When you see the ocean and you haven't seen it in 30 days, so you make a bracha. If you see, you know, particularly gorgeous landscapes, you make a bracha. When you see this, you make a bracha. So according to that, so women really should make Kiddush Levana, because when fundamentally you look up in the sky, you see the new moon during the month, you make the bracha.
Yeah.
So that's also a question, is that that's the case. So why are you allowed to delay the recitation until Motzei Shabbos or until you have a minyan?
Why do you need a minyan?
It's better to say it with a minyan. It's brought in the poskim that since there are more people, they're doing it together. So it's a sort of berovam hadras melech. The more people doing a mitzvah together, is considered a greater glory to God. So the idea is that you're
allowed to be outside.
Some people actually say that. She said that. She got it. She said the reason that women shouldn't make Kiddush Levana or don't have to make Kiddush Levana according to a certain poskim is that fundamentally you're right. It's just anytime you see, you make a bracha. But the minhag nowadays, it doesn't say this in the Gemara anywhere, but the minhag nowadays based on the poskim is that since the Gemara says that making Kiddush Levana is like going out to greet the divine presence, so you're not supposed to say Kiddush Levana indoors. You're supposed to just go outside and say Kiddush Levana. So since women are not really supposed to go outside, so therefore, that's why they're exempt from the Kiddush Levana. But the Lamaisa, practically speaking, I do encourage women to make Kiddush Levana, because fundamentally it's just the Birkas Hara'iyah of seeing the new moon, just like any other Birkas Hara'iyah. So you're allowed to delay, the normative understanding is that you're allowed to delay recitation of Kiddush Levana, even though fundamentally you should, as soon as you see it the first time that month, you should make Kiddush Levana. But we assume that you're allowed to delay in order to recite the mitzvah either on Motzei Shabbos when you're dressed nicely, or with a minyan in order to do the mitzvah in a more, bekavadik, mehudar type of manner. But some people do try to make Kiddush Havana right away, either with a minion or not. They try, or certainly if a minion is not going to be available, so it's a good idea to say Kiddush Havana the first time you see the moon that month.
The window was open.
Yeah.
Because you were leaning outside.
You're allowed... no, it's not an isser that you're Yotzei Kiddush Havana if you do it, even if you're standing inside. But more proper for a way of fulfilling the mitzvah is to go outside when you do it.
So Saudi Arabia women are putter from Kiddush Havana, right?
What? I encourage women to make Kiddush Havana.
Some months ago, I went to the Bratz Zoo for the first time since like